Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You make me cough, and I don't even need a cough.
I wasn't coughing until I hit record.
We're ready, mate.
Aye, let's go.
Let's go.
Why not?
Are you done?
Yes.
Right.
Just keep going, Charles.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Rote Report podcast in association with the Southern Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav back after the Ipswich game. I think we're just going to get straight into this. Chris is with us. Hiya, mate.
I think I'm all right. I'm confused, and I'd like to go through it to sort out how I feel about it.
I think I've had 12 pints. At this, to be fair, I'm doing all right, aren't I? Really, to be holding this conversation, but I think I needed it after that match, to be honest, because it was a bit of a roller coaster. At one stage, I was ready to leave on like 65 minutes. I was like, right, I'm done, I'm away. I'm just going to get the metro and beat the crowds and get back to the pub and just forget this even happened. And to be honest, in a way, I'm glad I didn't, because although we got beat and although there are lots of things to pull from this, and we'll get into it, it was actually quite entertaining, you know, as far as defeats go. You know, it wasn't boring towards the end. You know, we had a player sent off, we sort of went all out attack and we had a right go at them. And, you know, if it wasn't for a decent bit of goalkeeping from a terrible goalkeeper at the end of the game, we might have drawn the game. So all things considered, and it might just be the drink talking, because like I say, I've had a few pints, but I don't feel too despondent about this. By the way, I haven't checked social media. I think people have probably lost their minds by this point. You know, first game of the season. But what I do think is that I actually quite enjoyed the game, even though we got beat. Is that weird to say that? Because I actually think it was entertaining. I bet the neutrals watching probably enjoyed it.
Yeah. I thought it was a good game. You've got to remember Ipswich are a decent side. You know, none of us expected to just swat them aside before the game.
No. I listened to you talk to George on the preview pod. And to be honest, I didn't really know what to expect from Ipswich because I didn't watch much of League One last season. And then I heard him talk and he's talking about them being the best team in League One he's ever seen. And everyone's expecting them to have a really good season. And all I could think was, this is probably the worst time to play Ipswich because they're coming out of last season with a bit of momentum still. And it does count for a lot because these teams come out of... We did it. We were one of them. We were this team last season. You come out of that situation and you're full of beans, I guess, and nothing hanging over you. There's no expectation for you. I know obviously a lot of people think Ipswich are going to do well, but, you know, for them players, they're, let's go there and do our thing, and they did their thing, you know. I think this was a bad time to play Ipswich, if I'm honest.
Maybe. We won't know for a good while, but I was actually expecting more from Ipswich, if I'm honest.
Well, yeah, they weren't particularly impressive, were they? But it was a case that they got the job done in the end.
Yeah, I mean, they were organised, but I was expecting, especially early on, because, I mean, we'll get into kind of blow by blow, but, you know, just kind of overall, you talking about social media and what the kind of the general reaction is to the game. I mean, I as soon as the final whistle went, I kind of unplugged from it all. Went to sort the bands out, watched Harry Potter with a Ben, so I haven't kind of mulled on it for a few hours. And now we're kind of talking about it, and I'm trying to put it into perspective a little bit, because we look at the performance. For me, there's two, like a bit like Jekyll and Hyde, there's something to be very optimistic about in today's game. The first half an hour, we would have dominated any side in the Championship in the first half an hour of the game. And probably actually some sides in the bottom half of the Premier League, we would have absolutely dominated them. But having said that, we wouldn't have scored against any of them. And it goes back to basically a continuation of last season. I think it was a similar performance that we saw at home a lot last season, where we dominated the ball, dominated sides at home, but we weren't creating clear-cut chances. And we did that again today, where that first half an hour, it was like, oh, brilliant, we're on top. And every couple of minutes, you kind of reminded yourself, but we haven't scored. And you kept thinking about the scoreline and going, it's still 0-0, but we're all over them. And that can't last for 90 minutes, especially against, like we said, Ipswich Town are a decent side. They're not going to be dominated for 90 minutes. They're going to find a way to get into the game. They have decent forward players who can carve out a chance, and that's what happened. But the longer it stayed 0-0, the more Ipswich grew into the game. But to continue, like I said, it's a continuation of last season, where when we have periods where we dominate, we don't take advantage and get a goal a goal. And actually, the way Ipswich played was similar to a lot of our performances away from home. And I'm thinking, you know, when we played West Brom away, and even Preston, where, you know, you soak up the pressure and then you kind of hit them and you get a goal. It was almost they did to us what we did to teams towards the end of last season away.
Yeah.
And this is part of the frustration, because that's kind of the overriding emotion. It's not disappointment. It's not, oh, shit, everything's, you know, falling apart and all that sort of stuff. It's more frustration at the fact that we had these issues last season, and on the evidence of one game, and which isn't a lot, it's not a lot to go off, and it's we can't make conclusions. But off one game, you're starting to think, have we learned from last season, or are we just going in and doing the same thing?
Yeah, and I think with this game in particular, you know, I watched players do what they did last season. Ekwar, for me, was brilliant. Dan Neil moved the ball pretty well. The wingers, Clark and Roberts, were trying to cut inside whenever they got the ball. And it was a bit like, you know, is Semedo even on the pitch? Do they recognise that he's there? Do they want to hit him? They look like a bunch of players who gotten quite used to not really using the centre forward. That was the feeling I got coming away from it. You know, we were dominating the ball, especially in the first half, dominating the ball, getting on top of them, overrunning them in midfield, passing it out wide, doing everything you want to see your team do. And then when it came to having the killer instinct, we just didn't have it. And it was time and time again. And I think if you go into half time and you aren't 1-0 behind, it's very different. But the time at which we conceded the first goal, you know, if an away team can get a goal just before half time, they've got everything to play for. They you know, defend for their lives. And as George said to you on the preview pod, you know, it might have been in League One, but Ipswich's defending is one of their strong points. They don't defend a lead. And I just felt when we went 1-0 down, I was like, we aren't getting back in this. I had no confidence in us getting back in it.
Well, we didn't look like scoring.
Yeah, even when we were down to 10 men and we were throwing everything at them, I'm sat there and I'm thinking, we aren't getting back in this. I never at any point felt hopeful. I know the crowd did. And I know when we got that goal through Dan Neil, and there was a big cheer when we got the 13 minutes added on, people expected something. I think people could feel something, and the players certainly went for it. You know, you can't accuse them of giving up or anything, but it's the first time in a long time where I've watched Sunderland, even towards the end of last season, I had lots of belief. Today, I just didn't. I don't know what it is. I'm not, like, it's one game. I'm not writing them off for the season. Please don't anyone get us wrong on that. But I just didn't believe in their ability to get back in the game because of a mixture of things. A lot of it was to do with the way we were playing. And a lot of it was to do with the subs that Mowbray made. I didn't get the subs, if I'm honest. I actually felt Bellingham and Ekwell were the best two players on the pitch. And they both came off. We only had one striker in the entire squad, and he came off after an hour or so. And I just didn't get it. And I felt like that made us toothless, even when we really, really needed killer instinct. We just didn't have it because players who'd given us something to cling on to weren't there.
Well, yeah, and you know, I want to come back onto the subs as well, because we need to talk about them. You are right, but, you know, just looking at that first half an hour, you know, you had O'Neill and Ballard, who were under total control at the back. They were winning everything. Ballard was winning everything. O'Neill was, he was kind of dictating the tempo of the team at the back on the ball.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. Neil and Ekwa running the midfield. Brilliant. And then Job, brilliant touches and all this sort of stuff. And we got it from back to front, like brilliantly, you know, two or three passes, and we were in the final third. And then there was nothing. There was no spark. Mm. There was no nothing. But don't get us wrong. I'm not, that isn't suddenly hugely different to last season at times, because we had big periods last season,
especially at home. Yeah,
where the same happened. I mean, look at the Luton playoff game at home. It took an Ahmad Worldie to wake us up and to get us back into the game, because we couldn't create anything before that. And I think you're right about this, you know, Clark and Roberts playing wide, but they did the same things as they did last season with different players. You know, they had Job thinking, oh, well, you know, Clark's got the ball or Roberts got the ball wide, so I'm going to go central and I'm going to win the ball off the cross. But the cross never came in. Well, Roberts cut inside and he was looking for a 1-2 with his mate Ahmad, but he wasn't there. And Job was getting in. He was waiting for the cross.
There was a lad behind me who, exactly what you've just said there, he was like, Roberts is looking for Ahmad and he's just not there. Yeah. You could see it. It was quite sad, actually. You know, you could see him moving inside looking for that 1-2 and it wasn't there. Yeah. And we weren't overlapping either. You know, the fullback, it wasn't as though, particularly Trey Hume for me, I don't understand it, because he normally lives inside the opposition's half, but Trey Hume wasn't doing much overlapping on the outside either. It was a bit weird.
If you watch Trey Hume and Serkin, they both had different jobs. Trey Hume's job was to come inside, and his job was to play almost centrally when we were in possession.
But when Roberts was looking for the overlap, it wasn't there. Yeah.
Well, because we didn't play like that last season, because he didn't need it, because he had a mate on the right-hand side who went across to the right all the time. This year, Trey Hume needs to be that support to give Roberts a kind of a second option going down the right-hand side. Because if you looked on the other side, Dennis Serkin was on his bike all the time outside Clark, but Clark never... Clark,
he might as well have not been there, basically.
I don't know if Clark had a problem with Serkin doing it or what, but he'd never seemed to pick him out. But they both had different jobs. And it's this, now we've got to look at it, because last season, you know, Job's not going to magnetically go across to Roberts. So Hume needs to give him that kind of overlap to either pick him out or just do it on a dummy run so he can cut inside. But there was times today where Roberts had three or four players on him, and he tried to do it himself. We touched on it in pre-season. You know, Pritchard seemed to have this immediate realisation that he's got someone in the box, and he immediately started to knock balls in and pick them out. And straight away, Pritchard just realised, well, I'm going to change my game because we've got this big striker and I'm going to pick him out. But today, we did the same things as we did late last season when we didn't have a focal point up front. But today, we had a focal point, but we didn't use it. It was odd.
A lot of the people around me were pretty despondent when it came to him here. You know, talking about, oh, well, he didn't want the ball. He wasn't working hard enough. And I'm thinking, hang on a second, man. Like, yes, he's a young lad making his first senior appearance for Sunderland, and it's a big occasion for him. But for me, the attacking players did not supply him with anything. You know, You can only read so much into pre-season, but from what I've seen from him here in pre-season, you get crosses into the box, he'll attack them. And how many crosses did we put into the box?
Exactly.
There were none, as far as I can tell, by the time he went off. You've got to kind of look at your wide players and say, why weren't you putting the ball into dangerous areas, you know?
They were cutting inside to shoot, and you've got this big lad in the box. I mean, like I said, in pre-season, I was a little bit... And Job did really well, don't get us wrong, but... And we'll come on to the substitutions. I mean, we can get into it. But one thing I couldn't understand, instead of taking your striker off with half an hour to go, or actually, as it turned out, with about 40 minutes to go, there was almost 45 minutes to go when Amir got brought off with injury time. You know, instead of bringing your striker off, like, change things around to give him more supply. What I think was, bring Pritchard on to play in behind and then change it up a bit where...
Well, bring Bennett on. Bennett likes to cross the ball. He likes to put the ball. You know what I mean? We didn't even... Abdullah Barr came on for Semedo, for him here. It was Barr who came. So we brought a striker off. We brought on Pritchard for Bellingham. So Bellingham, who was playing in the 10, came off. Pritchard came on in his place. Then we brought on Barr for Hamia. Barr went wide. Clark went inside. It just, the shape, to me, the shape was all wrong. It didn't make any sense. I haven't seen a single game where Jack Clark has looked effective through the middle. It just doesn't suit him. And then Barr comes on the left-hand side and he's all right foot. He hasn't really got the pace to get down the outside. So, I don't know. I actually thought that, obviously, there were moments in the game where I feel like we let ourselves down defensively. I feel like in terms of the shape, we let ourselves down. But to me, that I don't get the subs. And, you know, he might have been asked about these things after the game, Mowbray. I haven't seen any interviews. I haven't heard anything. This might have been explained. But I don't get his changes in the game. I don't understand why you bring off a striker for a bunch of midfield players. And you know, there were times in the game where, in fact, later in the game, once Hume had been sent off, where we actually attacked the box. And I'm thinking, if you've got a centre forward in there, we might score. And, right. And you know, the only centre forward in the entire squad was sat on the bench getting his tracksuit back on, you know. I don't get it. I love Mowbray a bit. And I'm not sitting here, you know, people are going to hear us and think, bloody hell, he's already questioning Mowbray and all the rest of it. But I just think, I think he got his subs badly wrong. And to be honest, I would love to know what his thinking was behind bringing off a centre forward with an hour gone. I know Semedo didn't have a great game, but when you're chasing the game, you need a striker on the pitch.
Yeah, but like you said, he wasn't given the supply. We weren't crossing the ball in for the box. And the crazy thing was, like you've just talked about that period towards the end of the game where we were actually bombarding their box with balls into the box, and we stuck Ballard up there.
My mate turned around when Ballard's went up front. And the first thing I thought of was, why? Yeah. Why have we put a centre-half up front when we've just took a striker off? It made no sense.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the thing. So Hamia wants balls into the box. You bring him off, you stick a centre-forward up front, and then you start putting balls into the box. I mean, the whole thing it just doesn't make sense. And I know kind of Ballard, I think I'm not even sure if he was told. I think Ballard just decided he'd had enough and wanted to get in the box, I think. Because, I mean, to be, that was all through desperation, but we got ourselves in that position where it did get a bit desperate. But like I said, I mean, look, we're talking about kind of Mowbray's decisions and we're all kind of negative about it. But, I mean, it's, like I said, in terms of the performance,
before you do that, right, you've just mentioned Mowbray's decisions and stuff. But if their goalkeeper doesn't make that save towards the end, I guess he's vindicated in a way because two's each, and then you're like, bloody hell, you know, every change. So football's fine margins, isn't it?
Well, not just before. I mean, you can go back. I mean, what it was, I'm trying to look, it was something like, it was only 20 minutes gone.
The Bellingham chance.
The Bellingham chance. Yeah. That was only 20 minutes gone. I mean, he sticks that away. I mean, he wasn't quite expecting it to come to him, which was a bit odd. But,
yeah, it came to him quite quickly, didn't it? Yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, yes, don't get us wrong. I mean, that could have completely changed the game. And I think if Joe puts that away, we're winning the game 2 or 3-0. It's as simple as we're running away with it. But that chance still didn't, it still only came from an Ekwa shot from 25 yards. It wasn't us carving them open and creating a chance. It was kind of, you know, it was a long-range shot. We couldn't seem to slip someone in or get in behind, put a cross into the box. There was a daft goal-mouth scramble. And this is the other thing. First half an hour, like I said, we completely dominated the game. There was a stat after about half an hour on Sky saying it had a list of players who'd had the fewest touches on the ball. And five of the top six were Ipswich players.
Yeah.
And we completely dominated the first half an hour. But in that first half an hour, Ipswich had the best three chances.
Yeah, and in that first half an hour, how many times did their goalkeeper have to do anything?
No, nothing. Nothing at all. I mean, except that Ekwa saves, he fluffed that as well. He should have held on to that or palmed it wide. But surely someone sees that and they go, oh, bloody hell, the keeper's dodgy here. Start shooting. Have a shot. do something, you know.
Even before the game, though, their regular number one, he was injured. Yeah. So we knew going into the game, whoever was coming in was going to be second choice, second rate.
This lad hadn't started a game since 2021, and we stuck one shot at him, and that late save. I mean, you watch it back. I mean, he basically twists his foot the right way by accident and it bounces off his foot.
To be fair, I haven't seen it back. It looked good. It looked good in the moment, but I haven't seen it back.
He knew nothing about it. It ain't his foot, basically. I mean, he kind of half stuck it out. You know, you could argue it was a decent save, but I think it was more just...
Made himself big and hit him.
He just kind of stuck his foot out. But yeah, I mean, you look, there's things, you say fine margins, and it is. We could have easily run away with today because we, in terms of the performance, it was only one team in it after half an hour. But like I said, we haven't got that kind of cutting edge. We haven't got that... You know, when we're dominating, we haven't got that way of creating lots of chances. We weren't peppering the goal with shots for the Ipswich keeper to save. We weren't crossing the ball into the box. We were doing everything 100% correctly until the final third.
Yeah.
And then and that was the story.
Yeah. And I don't know whether I'm surprised or not. You know, the Broadhead goal. It just hits him, really. He doesn't know anything about it. But it's so typical, isn't it?
To be fair, if you watch the replay of it a couple of times, his movement is brilliant. You watch when the Ipswich player's about to take the shot, he's on his bike and he runs across the path of the ball.
Yeah.
And I can't decide whether, you know, his touch actually meant to go where it was. But he gambled and he put himself in that position. And to be fair, if a striker does that, that deserve things from it because that they get in there and get in the right place.
Well, Broadhead's been fantastic for Ipswich since he went there, and you know he didn't really do a great deal in that first half, but you know he was in the right place at the right time and he scores it, and I'm like, oh god, it's another occasion where an ex-Sun player turns up, and it's always at the Stadium of Light as well, isn't it? It's never away from home, but he turns up at the Stadium of Light. He's in the right place at the right time. He sticks it away. And you just sat there like totally deflated, because till that point, I actually felt really positive about the way we played. I was turning around to my friends. I was saying, you know, going into halftime, we're the better team. We've been totally on top. We've dominated the game. All we haven't done is really hit the back of the net. I actually think this might have been their first chance, maybe.
O'Nine cleared one off the line.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot about that. Yeah.
O'Nine cleared one off the line. Then they almost got through with Hurst. If he'd had a decent touch, he would have been clean through. Then they had a decent shot that went wide just after the half hour. Like I said, in the first half an hour, they had the best three chances of the game. Like they created much better chances than us, even though we were on top.
Obviously, the chances they had were better, but I think just in terms of the overall picture of the game, we were on top.
We dominated, but they created more than us.
Did you feel under threat at all at that point, though? Because I didn't.
Well, you know what it was? You know, can you remember when we talked about the? I'm pretty sure it was Sheffield United's first goal right on the stroke of half-time last season.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the almost the same happened again. And again, we're talking about lessons that we've almost carried over from last season. If you're able to watch the full 90 minutes again, go back and watch, because it's on the ball's down the right-hand side. Patrick Roberts does something weird. He plays a really short pass and just gives the ball away. They go on the break, and Equa has to sprint about 40, 50 yards to get back. And in the end, we manage to scramble it out, and it goes out for the throw-in. Mm-hmm. And you watch before the ball's taken, Equa has a right pop at Patrick Roberts for selling someone short and giving the ball away, because he's just had to run 50, 60 yards to get back. And he has a right pop at Patrick Roberts. And then they do a long throw-in. And then it goes to the back post. And that's when he has the shot and it hits off Broadhead. But it all stems from... And you're talking about the 45th minute going into half-time. And we made a similar mistake as we made last season, like against Sheffield United. Give the ball away. They break away. And yeah, okay, you can say there's a bit of time to defend it after that. But it's the same mistakes. It's game management and... Again, it's just another one to add to the list that I just think, all right, it's on the basis of one game, but that we've carried across from last season. And it's just a little bit frustrating.
Well, with that Hurst goal, it was so frustrating because obviously it wasn't long after half time, but he's poor. We've played against George Hurst a few times and he always seems to score against us. And I just think he's not a good player, but his finish was fantastic. Like, I can't take it away from him. Great finish, but you sat there watching it, you're thinking, what the hell's going on? What, like, why are we so wide open? Why was it so easy to get in behind and just score that goal? It's the first game of the season. We're not going to be at our sharpest. We're not going to be at our best. But we know exactly what Ipswich can do because they've done it in League One last season. They've come up here, first game of the season, obviously full of beans. You've got to know the risks. Don't leave gaps in behind. That's what they're going to exploit it and they're going to hurt you. Exactly what happened.
There was a few things that went into this goal because I think how much we dominated in the first half and then them nicking that really crap goal before half time. I mean, look, as fans, we know how much it knocks the stuffing out of us. But I actually think it knocked the stuffing out of the players and they were just, heads went down.
Well, you could tell after the, I think it was after the goal, wasn't it? We went to shit.
Yeah.
We saw it all over the place, giving the ball away and costing chances. It could have been worse.
Well, I think heads went down going into half time. And what I think happened, I'm not sure Mowbray was able to pick them up because I think he just said, keep doing what you're doing. But the problem is, I think half of them were frustrated on the pitch that they were playing so well, but we weren't creating anything. So there was this level of frustration. And I think the players went out in the second half and from the off, they just looked like their heads were still down, like still in the mud. Their chins were hitting the floor still off that goal kind of 20 minutes ago. And it was only 7 minutes into the second half. And you watch the goal again. And if you, like I said, if you're able to watch the 90 minutes again, it comes from Roberts giving the ball away again. And again, on their day, they can be the best players in the division. But on days like today, when they're both not at it, Roberts and Clark just keep giving the ball away. And it's fine when it's balanced against them creating and, you know you're creating chances. That's fine. You can accept it and say, well, look, that's a price to pay. We don't, you know, it's a price to pay for creative players that you're going to give the ball away, you know, 50% of the time. But the other 50% of the time, we're going to get a chance off it. But today, when you're not creating chances and all they're doing is giving the ball away, it's just kind of this melting pot of, you've got two talented players on the wing just getting frustrated with themselves and the rest of the team are getting frustrated and you have to change it up. I mean, you have to change it. And I know you've talked before, sometimes you have to try and keep these players on the pitch because at some point they'll have to produce. Yeah. But it's this fine line you have to walk where you say, well, you know, do you do that all the time or are the days, maybe like the Ipswich game, where you just say, no, it's not happening. We need to change it. And just hook one of them?
Yeah, well, I think that happened really in this game because he took off players who had been playing well. I mentioned it before. I thought Ekwah and Bellingham were the best two players on the pitch for Sunderland. They both came off. And I don't know whether... I do know. I think that hurt us. I think especially Job. If Job stays on the pitch because we're lacking that focal point, take him here off, take Semedo off. Fair enough. I don't think he had a great game and we have demonstrated the ability to play without a striker. So I can sort of like understand that to a degree. But if you notice when we were going long, who was winning the majority of the headers? It was Job. Job was winning the headers. He was winning the knockdowns. And we took him off and all of a sudden we didn't have anybody to hit. And I actually think he had a fantastic game. If I was going to make an argument for a man of the match, I would probably say Job because I just think... He didn't put a foot wrong. There wasn't a lot wrong with his performance. I mean, just stand there watching, it might have been because the majority of his touches were flicks and tricks and that, but I just really enjoyed watching him play with expression and leading the game. Me and my mates are sitting in the pub and we're talking about the team potentially who could play. And we were all undecided on that 10 position. We were all sitting there going, well, Pritchard, you know, could play because he's a bit more experienced and he's had a decent pre-season and he's linked up with Hamir and all the rest of it. And I was like, you know what? I just think because Joe played against Mallorca, I think he's going to play.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, he played. And he did. I don't think he let himself down at all. I didn't watch him at any point and think, oh, that's a 17-year-old kid playing. He put himself about. He won headers. When he got on the ball, he was tidy with it. And then he comes off and I don't know. I feel like we lost something when he came off. You know, when you're chasing the game... And you're looking at the scoreline, you're thinking, bloody hell, where we're going to get some magic from?
Yeah.
I didn't expect him to come off, if I'm honest. I know that Mowbray has a lot of trust in the likes of Clark Roberts and Neil and, you know, those players who've been good servants to him since he came here. But I think actually the players who were good servants to Mowbray didn't have the best afternoon. And yeah. You could argue that that's maybe why we didn't get back in the game.
I think there was the other thing you've got to take into account with the subs as well is the timing. Because I think there was an element of panic in there, because you go back to that second goal, that's only 7 minutes into the second half. Just quickly on that goal as well, we talked about Roberts giving the ball away, that's where it started. But yeah. We seemed to, because I think it was Ekwa who pretty much gave a free kick away, but the referee waved play on, but we seemed to stop. And 09 just got completely out of position on the ball that was slipped through, and it was just far too easy. The way kind of he slipped Hurst through, Broadhead kind of slipped him through. But we seemed to stop when the referee gave advantage for some reason. I think we thought, oh, he's going to blow up for a free kick. And then we just stopped. 09 got caught out. So they went 2-0 up. That's 7 minutes in the second half. 2 minutes later, Hume has a complete kind of brain fart, completely sloppy in the centre of the pitch, loses possession. And that's when Chaplin lobbed Patterson and it hit the bar. And the follow-up, really, I mean, that, you know, I think probably 7 times out of 10, that's a penalty, to be honest, the follow-up. So that was on kind of 54 minutes. And then like 3 or 4 minutes later, that's when Mowbray makes the subs. So I think Mowbray was thinking, oh, I'm gonna give these lads kind of 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And because we went 2 down and we were sloppy, then they hit the bar because we were sloppy.
That could have been bad, by the way. Imagine if that goes in. Jesus. Yeah.
When they hit the bar and we should have given the penalty away, I think he turns around to the bench and just makes a decision there and then, because we make the subs like 3 minutes later, like they come on. So I think he's turned around and I think there's an element of panic in his subs where he's just went, right, I need to change something. And he doesn't really think it through and he just makes the subs.
You know, sometimes in that moment of panic when you've got a decision to make, you do things that are a little bit radical and stuff. And I turned around to my mate and I said, you know what it is? When you look at the bench in pre-season, Riggs scored goals, Bennett scored goals. Why aren't they coming on? Why aren't you just, you need goals. Why aren't players coming on who've demonstrated the ability to score goals? I mean, you know, we might be like digging into this quite heavy for a first game of the season. And, you know, I do think in hindsight as well, I think Ipswich were carrying momentum forward. I know you're not too convinced by that, but I think, you know, coming...
They were there for the taking. They were there for the taking.
They were, but I just think that if you play Ipswich in October, November, it's a different game. I think first game of the season when they're up for it and they've got a big away crowd and there's 40-odd thousand, this is a big game for them and they've obviously turned up and they're buzzing for it. And I think for majority of the game, we were up for it. But I felt as though that there were points in the game where we've already said it, we didn't have that cutting edge, and Ipswich did. You know, even if it might have been players that we don't necessarily rate in terms of like Hurst and stuff, he got the chance and he scored. We didn't have anybody who did that. And it was too, by the time we got the goal back, even though after the goal, you know, after Neil's goal, there was a lot of time added on. I never felt like we were going to get back. I don't know. I don't know about you. It was different for you. I never felt like we were getting back into it. Hume gets sent off. We'll talk about that quickly as well. Hume's red card. What was it like on the replay, the second yellow for you? Because in the ground, I just thought, why has he done that? That was ridiculous. What was it like on the replay? From where I was sat, I'm thinking, why the hell's he done that?
Yeah. Well, it makes no difference because Hume lost his head because like I said, I watched the game on Friday night, first one, Sheffield Wednesday, and like I think three players were booked for just rolling the ball away. And the players have been told that this season, if you show frustration at referees' decisions, if you kick the ball away, if you roll the ball away from where it is, it's a yellow card. So even if you discount the foul completely and say, oh, I don't think the foul is a yellow card, Hume then smashed the ball off the advertisement boards. In this season, that's a yellow card. So even if he'd got away with a foul at booking and he stayed on the pitch, he smashed the ball away and there's his yellow card. So in theory, if the referee was going to book the foul, then actually he got two yellow cards. He actually got three yellow cards today because But actually, the thing about Hume getting sent off is that if you go back to the first yellow card, so the first yellow card was just after the half hour. But it was done. It was these moments of being sloppy. they're littered all over this game. Like, the two goals were because Patrick Roberts gave the ball away cheaply, and Hume got a yellow card because Dan Neil did the same. Dan Neil lost possession of the ball, and then we were caught out, and Hume had to make a tackle that gave away a yellow card. So if you look at this game, as much as, you know, first half an hour, we looked so impressive. All these daft moments where we were sloppy just added up to a player getting sent off and being 2-0 down. And it's these moments that we were doing last season. And, last season we were saying, lads are inexperienced and it's a young side. And look, we've still got a young side. But most of, it was only two lads making their debut today. So most of this team had a full season under their belt last season playing in the Championship. Mm-hmm. But we're making the same. I know it's only one game, but we're making the same mistakes. We're giving the ball away cheaply. And, you can see Mowbray pulling his hair out on the side of the pitch because he can see what's going to happen. And, I honestly think, sloppy moments led to a player being sent off and conceding two goals. And that's the game.
Yeah, and the goal that we got, it's a decent little move. Serkin belted into a decent area. Neil's there, he finishes well. We had other chances where we ran them close, and obviously we pushed forward. And I think for pretty much the last sort of 10 minutes of normal time, and then all of injury time, Ipswich were camped inside their own box pretty much. So we just had the freedom to get at them. And we did. We tried. I can't fault the team's perseverance. We definitely went at them, but it was too little too late. It was a case of you've already sort of thrown the game, and you're having to panic and get forward and take risks. And, players you can normally count upon, like Roberts, like Clark, it wasn't happening for them. Clark in particular, if you're Burnley watching that, you're thinking, well, maybe not. I'm not overreacting, and I'm not getting too carried away either way when it comes to this performance and this result. But to me, it's an often used phrase, isn't it? You learn more from your defeats and your disappointments and stuff. And I think we're just going to walk away from this game and think, well, there was a lot to take from that. There was a lot, and we've, it was people around me saying, is he taking off Hemia to prove a point that he hasn't? And I'm like, no, that's not it. But at the same time, when you're looking for some inspiration, we don't have another striker on the bench. And maybe they do come away from this and they go, we need to sort this problem out. We need to get a striker in soon rather than later. Yeah. We don't want to be waiting until the end of August, because by which point we could have played, I don't know how many games there is before at the end of the month, but four games, five games. By that point, we could be sitting there going, we really could have done with a striker. And maybe they'll look at it that way. But I just think as an overall performance, it started very well. We didn't have a killer instinct. Ipswich did. To me, they deserved the win. I think they were the better team in terms of just when it came to, away teams play very different to home teams. To come to the stadium alight in front of a crowd that size, and the atmosphere was very good, particularly early on, and handle yourself and then take your chances when you get them. Sometimes you just have to hold your hands up and go, fair play, Ipswich, You did well and you deserved your win. And we've got to now look at this performance, look at this result and think, what can we learn from it? Because if we do think of ourselves as a team who are capable of promotion this season, we can't have too many games like that at home where we just allow a team to come and take advantage of our deficiencies, which is what they did. And like I say, I've got no complaints about what actually happened in the game. I think Ipswich in the end deserved it. I don't think we had enough chances to sit. For me to sit here and go, we deserved to at least get a draw from that game, I don't think we did, because I don't think we created enough. Don't think we were good enough at the top end of the pitch. I'm looking at the stats now. 20 shots, 4 on target, 67% of the possession. We made almost twice as many passes as Ipswich did, 86% pass accuracy. We had 11 corners with a big team on the pitch, actually. Some big lads on the pitch. The corners were shite.
And free kicks.
I think Patrick Roberts took the first 4 or 5, and in the end, Jack Clark took them off him.
Shocking.
Awful.
Every free kick, every corner.
Yeah, we complained quite a lot last season about, we justified the fact we weren't very good at corners and set pieces by saying, well, we don't have a big team. We don't have many big players on the pitch. Well, the day we did, and they weren't good enough, So I think Tony Mowbray's got a lot of. You've got the Hartlepool pre-season game where he played, you know, quite virtually. Well, it was a completely different team, and he came away from that and he said, you know, I've learned quite a lot about this team. And, I think he was asked by one of the interviewers, you know, you learn more from your defeats and stuff, and he was like, yeah. And he probably did learn quite a lot about those players from that game. And then you look at this one, this was his first team, and you're like, they're making the same mistakes, you know. So we've got to come away from it, and we do have to work on it. You know, we've got crew coming up on Tuesday, and I assume everybody's expecting a lot of changes. And if you're any of them players who are going to play in that game, you've got to be looking at this Ipswich result and the performance and think, if I get my chance, I've got to take it, because I need to show him that I've got to be playing. And I hope that's the attitude coming away from it, because... Yeah, I mean, it's up until the point where Dan Neil got the goal, I was sat there thinking this has gone as badly as it could have gone.
Oh, it could have been worse. If that had dropped in, it could have been 3-0 down.
It could have been worse, but I was sat there thinking this is, you know, because you come into a game, it reminded me a little bit of that game when, I think, I can't remember who it was now, when Defoe made his debut the second time around, and like a decent crowd turned up, and there was the, you know, the banner in the rotor end, and there's a big deal made out of Defoe signing, and we just didn't turn up, and it was crap. And you're thinking, God, you know, we've hyped this occasion up so much, and it was terrible. It was sort of that same sort of feeling where you sat there and you're thinking, bloody hell, like, you know, expecting Sunderland to actually deliver and not doing it. It was, yeah.
I mean, just going back to the kind of striker situation. I found it, I mean, going right, I was a little bit confused before kickoff because, you know, I'm sitting there, like, looking forward to kickoff, opening day of the season, and then Tony Mowbray comes on and you're expecting this kind of, you know, oh, it's great, you know, start of the season. And the interviewer asked him about, oh, he says, you know, two new players in the team, you know, 17-year-old Job and 19-year-old Tamir and all this sort of stuff. And, like, you know, he was asked about, instead of kind of, I don't know, kind of, being kind of really positive about it, like his reaction, and this was before the game, before kickoff, and his reaction to that question was, oh well, it's not ideal. And it was a bit like almost like, because he said, oh, it's not ideal, and we've got Bradley Dack and we've got Ross Stewart sitting there waiting to come in. And I was kind of looking confused at the screen at why he said it, but
yeah,
I just don't think he was confident in kind of what he was putting out. He didn't seem to be like, oh yeah, they're great young lads, they'll do really well, you know, it's all this sort of stuff. He was like, oh yeah, it's not ideal that they have to play. I thought,
He's a bit, we've talked about this quite a bit though, haven't we? You know, some of the things that Tony Mowbray says, you do take a step back. So he is very glass half empty when it comes to sitting in front of the press. And I don't know whether he's different, and I don't know whether he's different, you know, when the camera's on the microphones on he's with the players. Does he take a different, is this just his approach to be more conservative when people are asking him questions, not to heap too much pressure on, perhaps, but
the other thing we're talking about, you know, the striking position, and we know we need, you know, we've brought two in. Ross Stewart's probably going to be fully fit October, November, so let's just forget about him for 3 months or whatever it's going to be, and we've got these two young lads, we're probably going to need another one. Well, based off today, we are probably going to need another body there, whether it's a loan signing. But the fact of the matter is, we had a striker on the pitch today. And, you know, people can say that, all right, he's a young lad, and yes, he is. But he's a unit. He's a big lad. You know, early on in the game, he was pressing really well. He was harrying the Ipswich defenders. And like my point would be that, you know, if people talk about we need a striker, I'm not going to argue with that. But the striker we had on the pitch, you need to have playing patterns to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Like today it was like we almost forgot he was there, and we played in a way that didn't support having a focal man, having a target man, having a focal point up front. And it doesn't matter what striker we bring in, if you don't work out those patterns and play to the strengths of who you play up front, we could bring in a fantastic striker. But if we don't get the ball into his feet and get the ball into the box, it won't matter who it is. Yeah. So, okay, we need another body in. You know, we need another striker. Fair enough. I'm not going to argue with that. But, you know, at least, you know, whoever that person's going to be. And to be honest, if you have the playing patterns to work around Hamia, you know, like in pre-season, he scored a couple of goals because the ball was played into a box and there he was on it. Today, yeah. The ball wasn't played into the box, so I don't really get what he was supposed to do. So We need to kind of set up this side and say it's a different side to last season. We've got to think differently. If we've got a focal point up front, because you touched on it right at the beginning, the players got used to coming back inside and coming back with a ball because they knew nobody was going to be in the box waiting for a cross. And now there is. So you've got to play to your strengths.
So
I'm not going to argue bringing a body, bringing a striker, but at the same time, it can be a great striker and it's not going to work unless we change how we play.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn to do off the back of this, I think. And you can tell by the way we're talking, we're really disappointed with how things went, you know.
It's frustration. It's frustration because, like I said, for the first half an hour, we'd have dominated any side in this division, but we wouldn't have scored against anyone.
No. And I do think back to sort of the way things have gone in the last year or so, and I think, well, for the majority of the time, these players have got used to not playing with a striker up front. Yeah. And you could sort of tell that in the performance. It was just, disjointed, I think, is probably the word I would use. And luckily, it's the first game. And you know, again, I'm generally a bit of a happy clapper. And I think, you know, I do try and say the positives and things. And I think, well, if you're going to get beat, try and come away from it and think, right, well, what can we do to ensure that we don't do that again? And there's a lot to take from it. Me and you have went through pretty much everything here, and that's got to be the attitude coming away from this. Ignore Crew. You know, Crew's on Tuesday. It's a League Cup game. I'm not bothered about the League Cup, you know, and I'm not going to spend too much time talking about it because I'm not arsed, really. You know, I will watch on Tuesday, and I'm sure we'll do a podcast after it, and, you know, there'll be things to talk about, and hopefully there's players in that game who do themselves justice and maybe give Tony Mowbray things to think about for the next game away from home. But on the back of this game, we've got to kind of sit here and think, you know, that was disappointing. For a team who made the playoffs last year, when you play a newly promoted side at home, I think you expect a bit more than what we got tonight and today. And it's just, you know, I don't think anyone's sitting here and you know, I'm sure there are Sunderland fans who are throwing out the baby with the bathwater and you know, losing their minds. I don't think it's time for that because it's one game into the season and there was new players on the pitch and there's quite a lot to learn to do when it comes to the players just playing around each other. But I think you've still got to, you do kind of have to take a step back and go, right, okay, let's not get carried away with how well things went last year. Let's really dig into this and make sure that we play a style of football that suits what we've got, because to me, that wasn't what we did. We made sure that we passed it around nicely in the sort of lower half of the pitch and in the middle of the pitch. Once we got the top half, it was like, we don't really know what to do here. And I think if you're going to have a good season this year, that's something you have to work out quickly.
Yeah, and that's the positive for me. That, like I said, if you just focus on the first half an hour, there's not a team in this division who can live with that. But if you add being clinical to that performance, we'll be top six this season, no bother. And it's being clinical and taking advantage of being on top as much as we were. Because let's not get away, we were fantastic first half an hour. But you've got to, if you add, like I said, if you add that goal to that first half an hour, that's the perfect performance. And we go on and win that game and take 3 points. But the problem is we didn't look like getting a goal. Like that's the problem. We had to rely on a long range shot or Clark possibly getting a penalty when he went down. But that's not creating a chance, is it? That's not kind of cutting through the opposition. If we add some of that and be more clinical, we'll be fine and we'll have a fantastic season. But that's the only thing that was missing from that first half an hour. Everything else was spot on. And then after that, Ipswich just grew in confidence because they realised we could have played all night and kind of not scored until we got desperate at the end. So that's the positive for me. I think we were fantastic. It was, you know, I had a big grin on my face after half an hour. I thought we're going to steamroller them, but then we kind of forgot to score when we dominated, and that was the problem.
It was, and like I say, you can probably tell now our voices were disappointed because we are, but it's going to be there's another 45 league games, and God knows how many cup games and all the rest of it. You know, there's a long way to go.
Just quickly, because Mr. Chapman, Craig, he pulled up a cracking thought back from Dennis Smith's promotion season in 89-90. First home game of the season that year. We played Ipswich at home and they absolutely wiped the floor with us. They were 3-0 up after 22 minutes and ended up winning 4-2. And we ended up going up through the playoffs.
There you go.
We'll take that again. Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly. Why not? You know, it's a long old season. I'm sure we'll be fine, but you can't overreact either way. You know, you can't sit here and go, oh, that wasn't that bad, really, you know, but you also can't sit here and go, that was horrendous. I think you've got to find that middle ground and kind of acknowledge that we were probably on the occasion beaten by the better team. And, you know, I'm not going to get carried away. I think we're going to bring in forwards. We're going to bring in some better players. The squad's going to look a lot stronger come the end of August. And yeah, we'll be fine. I'm not going to overreact on one performance. I think Ipswich, you know, and you got this, this picture from speaking to George on the preview. A lot of people are expecting Ipswich to have a really good season. I wasn't convinced before the game. I was like, I don't get it, you know. But I don't think they were particularly great on this occasion. But at the same time, you know, they came somewhere that's pretty difficult. You know, Stadium of Light. They came and they got a result, and you kind of have to stand back and go, fair play. You deserve the win. Well done. You know, we'll see where you are at the end of the season.
Well, you say that, but if they looked at our home form last season and watched us, you know, watched recordings of us last season, they probably would have thought, we can get 3 points here, because we need to change that at home. We need to.
We do.
You know, I thought if this season we make Stadium Light a bit of a fortress at home, you know, and keep with that away form we had, you know, it could be something pretty special. But it doesn't look like we've come up with that solution at home just yet. So it'll be interesting to see if we have better home form. But yeah, I'm not convinced by Ipswich. I think top half. I was actually expecting more from them from what people have been saying. And I thought, yes, they were really organised. I was expecting more from them going forward. They'll be up there. They'll be absolutely fine. Top half, maybe challenging for the playoffs. But you're not telling me that they're going to be kind of in for, you know, contention for the automatics. No chance. Egg on my face.
yeah. Pull this up, Ipswich fans, when you eventually get promoted and Chris is wrong. cheers, mate. Thanks for joining us as always. Thanks to the listeners for joining us. We've got some anger out, I think, you know, some frustration. Yeah, that's it.
I've got back the positives, which is good.
Yeah, we got some positives towards the end. And cheers to the listeners. Thanks for joining us. If you want your Sunderland content, if you can still be arsed with Sunderland between now and Tuesday, we will have stuff up on rotoreport.sbnation.com, so make sure you check that out. If not, make sure you just check the podcast out after the Crewe game, and we'll catch you there. Cheers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.